You're listening to The Breakfast Show here on Faith FM. This is Kathy and Lawson here, and we have DJ Rach in the studio in Kurumbong today. It's now time for our second hour. Yeah, our show.
Well, we're puffing into the mics right now. We just had to go for a quick excursion out of the studio during that song break, and we're back though, ready to go, ready to get into our next quiz question. It is this: according to Deuteronomy 3, how was a span measured? Okay, so according to Deuteronomy 3, how was a span measured? Was it A, outstretched hand from the tip of the thumb to the tip of the pinky, B, from the elbow to the wrist, C, an outstretched arm's length, or D, from 1 foot to the other? So if you know the answer to this one, 0491-064-669 is the number to text. If you text that number with the correct answer, you'll go into the draw to win our amazing prize for this week. We have the Andrews Study Bible that we want to give to you absolutely for free. This is an awesome, expensive, amazing, helpful Bible that would just be a blessing to you. You'll be able to share Bible studies with people from this Bible. You'll be able to see all the chain referencing as Joseph was talking about earlier. But again, hey, 0491-064-669 is the number to text. And that question was, according to Deuteronomy 3, how is a span measured? Was it A, outstretched hand from the tip of the thumb to the tip of the pinky, B, from the elbow to the wrist, C, outstretched arm's length, or D, from 1 foot to another foot? 0491-064-669.
There you go. And Lawson, so let's open our Bibles in Mark chapter 5. This is an incredible story, and I'll tell you why it is an incredible story. And we have to pay attention to it. Mark wants us to pay attention to that story. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because in the Gospel of Mark, we see a lot of fast-paced action, don't we? Mm-hmm. Fast, immediately. We see this all the time. And then from time to time, the book slows down. And as it slows down, it kind of zooms in and focuses in a particular story of interest.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, hey, Mark, you're rushing all the way through, and now you want us to stop and smell the flowers?
Yeah.
It's because there's something here, something amazing about Jesus that he wants us all to know. Okay, let's start reading the story from verse 1 all the way through verse 20. Start reading, and then we stop along the way to comment here on the landscape.
Sure. It says this in Mark chapter 5 and verse 1. Then they came to the other side of the sea, to the country of the Gadarenes.
Gadarenes, I think.
Gadarenes, right? Okay. when they had come out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tomb a man with an unclean spirit, who had his dwelling among the tombs, and no one could bind him, not even with chains, because he had often been bound with shackles and chains, and the chains had been pulled apart by him, and the shackles and and the shackles broke in pieces. Neither could anyone tame him, and always night and day he was in the mountains and in the tombs, crying out and cutting himself with stones.
Okay, let's just pause here.
Yeah,
we have this opening scene.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that the disciples went through a turmoil, through a very difficult storm, to traverse from one side of Lake Galilee to the other side. And when they arrive at the other side, they are confronted by this picture, a man that is living in very inhumane conditions.
Mm.
He was demon-possessed. He was living among the tombs.
Mm-hmm.
They tried before to chain him. Like, imagine, like, you're in a situation where you need to be chained to be contained, and yet the chains cannot contain you. And this is one of the things is I just want to say, put a little parenthesis here, Lawson.
Mm.
One of the classical symptoms of demon possession, because a lot of times, demon possessions, they cannot either be easily discovered. They could be not easily identified, and sometimes they can be misidentified with some other mental health conditions.
Mm.
You know, often people are bearing things such, for example, schizophrenia, and they have impressions that there are people stalking them around, or, you know, actually, we're talking about Sonia Massey, you know, she was diagnosed with schizophrenia, you know, a little bit prior to the episode where the tragedy happened there. And she, you know, so that could be one of the explanations why she called the cops to say, hey, there's someone stalking on my house.
Mm.
And then the cops said, look, there's no one here, lady.
Yeah. Okay?
So sometimes there are some interconnections there. However, one of the classical symptoms of actual demon possession is supernatural strength.
Yeah.
People possessing a strength that is superhuman. And in this case, we see that happening. Mm-hmm. Here, with a man being able to break the, you know, chains, you know, with his bare hands. So we see this picture, and it's a heartbreaking picture.
Mm.
See a man, he's cutting himself, he's shouting, you know, nobody wants to have anything to do with him. He is in absolutely suffering. And the Bible says here very clearly, he, you know, he was possessed by an unclean spirit.
Yeah.
Okay? So that's the setting.
He's in a bad way.
Jesus traversed the entire Sea of Galilee. Mm. He went through the storms. He placed his disciples in difficult ordeals just so he could meet that man who was the most despised of despised people.
Yeah, wow.
Jesus went there for that one soul.
Mm.
In the same way that Jesus would die for just, you know, for just if one person in this planet would be saved, you know, Jesus would come and he would have died nonetheless.
Yeah, and it's truly a case of the light shining brightest in the darkest of places.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've had a chat, and this is kind of a colloquial attitude amongst, you know, Australian secular people, particularly maybe some of my family and some of my friends who aren't Christian, who I knew before I was a Christian. They say stuff to me like, oh, if I went into church, you know, God would strike me down. Like this whole idea of, hey, you know, I'm not a Christian. I consider myself as a person far from God. Therefore, God hates me. And, you know, if I got anywhere close to God or anywhere near God, you know, it would be a bad situation, a bad ordeal. And it's funny hearing them say this in the light of a story like this, where Jesus specifically goes to the darkest places and a place much darker than the lives some of my family or friends live. You know, he goes to, you know, the darkest of places to try and enable healing. And in fact, you know, furthermore, the most criticism that Jesus has throughout the Gospels and even particularly in the book of Revelation, the most criticism that Jesus has, if you can say, okay, what's the most criticized group? It's false Christians. Like, it's people who claim the name of Jesus, who claim I am close to Jesus, you know, but are not. And so I think that this story, just from the outset here, and I loved how you've introduced it as Jesus going, you know, traveling the Sea of Galilee just to meet this person. Like, this is a reflection of Jesus leaving the 99 to save
the 99. Love it, Lawson.
Going to the depths of the darkest places, you know, and even for us, we can sometimes feel like, man, I'll never be good enough for Jesus. Like, I'm such a failure. Like, I've made so many mistakes. This passage right here is an evidence that if you feel convicted that you're not good enough, that you fall short of the glory of God, this is the perfect position that you can be in to actually receive grace and love and help from Jesus. Just turn to him. But yeah, I love this start here. It's giving us the profile of a man who, in every sense of the word, is truly lost into demon possession, lost into, you know, someone who isn't trying to keep up with the Joneses, someone who isn't trying to, you know, live for the love of money. Like, this is a person who is suffering from, like, crippling insanity, who has no concept of right or wrong or anything like that. And this is the person to whom Jesus is going to enable salvation.
That's right. And one of the things that I love about the fact that God is omniscient, is that because he's omniscient, to him, he gives his full attention to every single human being as if you were the only human being on earth. So you listener, God relates to you as if you were the only person who existed. His attention is not divided among anyone else. Is fully to you. And this is only possible because he is an infinite God with an infinite mind and with an infinite love for you. This is Faith FM. We'll continue after the ad.
You're listening to The Breakfast Show. Connect with us on 0491 064 669.
So let's return here to the story, Lawson. What happens here from verse 6 onwards?
Hey, verse 6 onwards, when he saw Jesus from afar. This is the man in the tomb. This is the man in the tomb. When he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and worshipped him. Verse 7, and he cried out with a loud voice and said, "What have I to do with you, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I implore you by God that you do not torment me."
Okay, let's just pause here because there's a lot to unpack.
Yeah, well.
There are two distinct characters at play here. Two distinct entities. One is a man who sees Jesus from afar, and he ran and he worships him.
Mm.
These are not the demons.
Wow. Okay.
The demons do not worship Jesus. They resist. They want to be worshiped themselves.
Mm.
So there was something inside of that man that when he saw Jesus, he knew that Jesus could do something for him, even though he could not even say a word.
Mm-hmm.
In our 20 million movement study guide, which you can access for absolutely free on sabbath.school or downloading the Sabbath School app in your app store of choice, the title of this message is so well titled.
Mm-hmm.
Is "Can You Hear a Whisper Above a Shout?"
Wow.
Can you hear a whisper above a shout? Because immediately there is a shout here, and the demons, they recognize Jesus. "What do I have to do with you, Jesus, Son of the Most High God?" These are the demons.
Mm.
This is a title of Jesus that the demons recognize. And this is another theme in the Gospel of Mark, saying, hey, look, even the demons recognize who Jesus is. Yeah. That's not the big deal. It's like, who do you think Jesus is, and how are you going to respond to that?
That's right. Knowing and understanding that Jesus is the Son of God wasn't the problem for Jesus. Oh, well, for the demons or Satan. No, the problem was, you know, having to submit themselves to him and his authority, and in this particular case, like, they know and they understand also the results of Jesus's presence there with them, like, and that's why they cry out. They say, "I implore you by God that you do not torment me," kind of doing a very, very similar tactic to Satan during the temptations of Jesus as well. You know, like, "Oh, don't torment me. You know, aren't you supposed to be loving? Like, oh, don't do this to me."
That's
very,
right.
Very interesting.
And it was very interesting because, the demons had, I think, the wrong picture of Jesus, or at least the wrong understanding of scriptures, at least these ones, because Jesus did not come to torment.
Mm.
He did not come to destroy the demons, not in his first coming.
Yeah.
And yet, somehow, Satan, Lucifer, told them the lie that God is after you.
Yeah,
God wants to torment you. So even the demons had a distorted and a red picture of Jesus as the one who comes with the objective to torment them.
Mm.
It would be very, very clear that this is not what Jesus is going to do.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, how did that man know that Jesus was worthy to be worshipped? What do you think, Lawson?
This is such a good question. Like, there's a number of theories that we could come up with. Potentially, he had heard about Jesus beforehand. You know, Jesus' fame spreading.
Yeah, potentially.
I can also, like, get this sense of, like, this man is so embroiled in demon possession. And, like, I feel like this person would have, in some sense, an understanding or, like, an inclination of or a feeling of, like, okay, so, like, all his life is being, like, manipulated by demons to do these, like, awful and terrible things. And these demons, when they see Jesus, like, they're worried. And, like, this man sees Jesus and can potentially feel inside of him, like, the recoil of the demons before before Christ.
Yeah, I think that that could be one of the possible reasons as well. He could have sensed something, the discomfort, the fear of the demons, and something like, hey, if the demons are fearing him, that must be good news for me.
Mm.
So he goes there and he worships him, and without a word, he doesn't say anything, but he's asking for help.
Yeah. It's like, to this guy, he's a man, you know, in the desert alone, you know, suffering from dehydration, like he's about to die, and sees a man carrying water through the desert, you know, it's like he sees maybe the bucket, and he sees, you know, the splashing of the water out of the top. He can't see the water in the bucket, but he just sees that, and it's like, wow, that's where I need to go, you know. Similar experience here. He just sees this guy who, in every sense, is, you know, he can feel it. He can see himself, a man whom which the Holy Spirit was present. And you know, he probably hadn't seen that in the rest of the population.
No. And I'm wondering if the calming of the storm has something to do with it. Like, he is there. There's like, he's exposed to the elements, most likely. There's this massive storm coming. He might, you know, have had a vision.
A view of the lake.
A view of the lake.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden he sees that all these other boats coming back. And then all of a sudden this storm just instantly ceases. And then this boat comes towards his way. I'm like, what is this boat coming towards my way? Who might be in this boat that would not have abandoned the trip during a storm such as this? And not only that, who is in that boat that managed to calm the storms and the winds in a way that I have never seen before?
Yeah.
Maybe he is the son of David. Maybe there is hope for me. Maybe he is coming for me.
Mm.
It took a lot of faith. So this is why he ran. He tried to run to Jesus, and then he worshiped him. Let's keep going here, Lawson, because there's more here to unpack.
Let's continue in verse 8. It says, "For he said to him," this is Jesus speaking, "come out of the man, unclean spirit. Then he asked him, what is your name? And he answered, the spirit, saying, my name is Legion, for we are many. Also, he begged him earnestly that he would not send them out of the country. Now, a large herd of swine was feeding near the mountains. So all the demons begged him, saying, send us to the swine that we may enter them. And at once Jesus gave them permission. Then the unclean spirits went out and entered the swine. There were about 2,000. And the herd ran violently down the hill, the steep place into the sea and drowned in the sea."
That's right. This is very interesting here. And just a few comments. Number one, it clearly shows what is the hierarchy and the power difference between Jesus and the demons. Mm. The demons are asking for permission. Jesus gives permission. Jesus is stronger. They're begging him. They're asking. They know that they cannot do anything without the permission of God. And God will not do anything unless Jesus prays for them.
Mm.
So they know that there's a hierarchy here. They know that they are subject to Jesus, even though they do not want to yield, even though they're kind of challenging Jesus' authority. You know, he asks, like, what's your name? Say, we're not going to tell your name. We're just so many.
Mm.
You know, like, go mind your own business kind of thing. They're resisting, but at the same time, they're powerless.
Yeah. I wonder what the idea is behind what they say here. Like, you know, they beg Jesus, don't send us out of the country. I wonder what the idea is here. You know, maybe they were under the orders of Satan to, you know, occupy this country, and they're fearing, well, like, their leader, Satan. Maybe there's some fear going on here of, like, oh, you know, we have express orders to do this job, and Jesus, don't send us out, you know, because we've also, you know, we're fearful of one of our leader,
yeah,
Satan,
absolutely.
Potentially.
It could,
like,
be.
I've always wondered why they said this, because there's no real explanation. I'm like, oh, like, Why are they begging Jesus not to put them in a different geographical location? But what I think is particularly interesting is that Jesus doesn't do the thing that they tell him not to do. It seems as though Jesus actually kind of just, you know, just says, oh, yeah, whatever. Like come out, like, he came to serve the lost, you know, serve this lost man. And for the demons, it's kind of like, listen, you know, do whatever, like, you guys can go out, you can go into these pigs, you can go wherever, like, I'm going to be here to protect my people.
Yeah, Jesus allowed them. So this is also, you know, a very important principle of the great controversy here. Demons have free will.
Yeah.
And God respects that free will within certain boundaries.
Yeah.
So he says, you want to go to the swine? Yes. And why do you think that Jesus was sending them to the swine?
Well,
oh, sorry. Why do you think that they wanted to go to the swine? Well, clearly they wanted to kill the pigs.
Yeah.
And what results, what damage would that cause to the cause of Jesus? That's what we're finding out. Next, yes.
Yeah. You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM. Positively different.
And right now, we are going to give you guys our very final question for the quiz today. In 1 John chapter 1 and verse 1, with what three of the five senses did the writer experience the word of life firsthand? It's a very interesting question here. In 1 John 1, 1, with what three of the five senses did the writer experience the word of life firsthand? Now, those senses, the five senses, very famous. You have what? Sight, touch, hearing, smelling, and what's the last one?
Tasting,
of course. And so, hey guys, if you know the answer to this one, 0491-064-669. In 1 John 1:1, what three of the five sentences did the writer experience the word of life firsthand? 0491-064-669. Our prize for this week, the Andrew's Study Bible.
All right. So the demon's strategy was very simple. They wanted to prevent Jesus from entering into the land of the Gadarenes.
Mm.
How they are going to do this? Well, by marring Jesus' reputation.
Mm.
So they thought, well, let's destroy the pigs. 2,000 pigs. That's a sizable amount of pigs.
That's a lot.
That would be a catastrophic loss for the owners.
Mm.
And once they know that that was all because of Jesus, guess what? Jesus will never be welcome in this country.
Mm.
Number one, he's a Jew. Number two, he has caused us these incredible losses. And when you see that there's a very interesting and important detail in this story, that place to which Jesus went, we're talking about, like, how did they know that they were coming for him? It's filled with unclean stuff. There's an unclean demon. There's tombs. Tombs were unclean.
Mm.
Ceremonially for the Jews. There is blood involved because he was cutting himself. This is unclean. So Jesus is going to the unclean of the uncleanest of the unclean places to see this guy. And then these demons are having this strategy. And Jesus says, yeah, okay, you can go on with your strategy. Let's see if you're going to stop me. Yeah, mm-hmm. Go ahead. You do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's see what happened.
Well, they continue on here. And
verse 14.
Yeah, verse 14. So those who fed the swine fled, and they told it to the city and in the country. And they went out to see what it was that had happened. Then they came to Jesus and saw the one who had been demon-possessed and had the legion sitting and clothed and in his right mind. And they were afraid. And those who saw it told them how it happened to him who had been demon-possessed and about the swine. Then they began to plead with him to depart from their region. And when he got into the boat, he who had been demon-possessed begged him that he might be with him. However, Jesus did not permit him, but said to him, "Go home to your friends and tell them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he has had compassion on you." And he departed and began to proclaim in Decapolis all that Jesus had done for him, and all marveled.
Wow.
This is powerful.
Let's just unpack this. So the workers that were working at that swine farm, they fled, they told everyone, and people came to Jesus and they were begging him to say, hey, please, don't come here anymore. You're not welcome. You're not welcome. People were, you know, the demons were probably saying, you know, spreading the message that, hey, if he has caused so much damage in the first day, imagine how much more damage he won't cause to our economy if he lingers with us. So they're like, please, you know, Mr. Jesus, we don't want any trouble. Please just go.
Yeah.
But then, and Jesus said, okay. But then they saw the man who nobody could contain.
Mm-hmm.
And he was clothed, he was in his right mind, he was sitting, he was a transformed person.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they were bewildered. Now, the man came to Jesus and says, Lord, can I follow you? Can I be one of my disciples?
Mm.
And Jesus says, no, you cannot.
Man, this would be a little bit heartbreaking for him. In this,
it would be heartbreaking, but you're saying, I actually have something more important for you to do. Because I cannot come into this town. I cannot come into this country, but you can.
Mm.
And I want you to be my representative. You will be my first missionary.
Wow.
But what do I say, Lord? I don't know much. I haven't heard your parables. I don't know theology. I'm not a Jew. Yeah. He says, just go and tell them the great things the Lord has done for you and how he has had compassion on you.
Mm.
This is witnessing. A lot of people say, oh, I'm so afraid and I'm so insecure in sharing my faith because I do not know. What if people ask me questions and I don't know how to answer these questions? And what if people are going to judge me? And Jesus just says, you want to, you know what witnessing is like? It's very, very simple. Just tell them one good thing that God has done for you.
Yeah.
Look, I love Jesus because blank, fill in the blank.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is enough because people then will think, okay, well, this person might be a little bit crazy, but we cannot, but they're saying that there is a God that is worthy. There is a God that helped them. And if God has helped them in their needs, I wonder if God could actually help me in my needs.
Mm.
There's no secret. There's the only secret of witnessing is not about, you know, proving things in the Bible. It's not, no. If you know all these things and you get great, use that as, you know, arrows in your quiver.
Mm.
But the essence of witnessing is just telling the mercies of God in your life. Yeah. Has God done anything good to your life, Lawson?
Yeah, absolutely.
God done anything good to in your life, Rachel? Has God done anything good to your life, beloved listener?
Yeah.
Well, pray that you have the opportunity to say this. You can say, you know what? I just love God so much. He saved me. He forgave me. He has given me hope. Whatever it is, this is the essence of witnessing.
And that comes from any side or any life experience, whether you grew up in the roughest of toughest life experiences and you came to Christ after, whether you grew up in the church, like everyone has an experience. And it was really, really cool. Like we ran this program for youth and young people over the last 2 weeks that I was away. Not last week, but the week before I was away. Me and my girlfriend run this program and it's all these like young Christian kids, like 14, 15, coming together and like meeting people and selling books and doing stuff. And some of the testimonies that they had of like, man, I pray that God would find me someone to share my faith with today. And I was talking to some lady at her doorstep and she started crying because her father had passed away and I was able to share a book with her and share a Bible verse with her and pray for her. Like, this is a testimony that they have to share. Like, these kids are all growing up in Christian families. They don't have really, you know, gnarly stories, but they all have stories of like, God worked in my life. Like, God helped me do something. God changed me in a certain way, you know, and it's interesting. Like, when we can share those stories sincerely, like I just know from my own life, like I've done a lot of speaking, I've done a lot of preaching and whatnot, and I've like preached some sermons where I'm like, man, this is like a magnum opus, you know, theologically, like this is like, you know, I've done the work, I've done the research, I've got some cool stories, I've put this together, this is amazing. And then like, and I'm expecting that my sermon will finish and everyone will be in tears because they realize how amazing God is from the truth of God's word. Man, and then I just like go and just, I tell people my story about how I became Christian. And they're like, that was the most powerful thing that I've ever heard. Like, you know, they're like crying. And so I'm like, man, like, you know, it makes me, but I got to realize at the same time, it's like, no, because what can be more powerful than the way that God has worked in your life? You know, this doesn't discount the power of, you know, the Bible and whatnot and the ability that the words have to change you. But really, we all have a story to share. And to someone out there, they need to hear it. They need to hear it, the way that God worked in your life, because they're going through the same things that you are or you were, and they're waiting to hear of someone who had a life-changing experience just like this man in the uncleanest of unclean places experiencing redemption.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM, positively different.
We have now come to the time that we will reveal the answers to the quiz questions. Lawson, what was the first quiz question again?
Hey, it was simply this. Fill in the blank. For everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved, was the answer there. That's powerful right. passage from the book of Romans. Next one here.
Let me just say something about that one.
Yeah.
There is, this passage is both in the book of Romans, is also in the book of Acts, chapter 2, verse 21. Mm-hmm. And they're both a quotation from Joel. Now, there's an interesting thing here, because for everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. Now, a lot of people believe that, oh, no, I just call the name of the Lord and I'll be saved.
Mm.
The context is those who call on the name of the Lord are the true worshipers of God.
Mm.
Are those who truly place their trust in God. And then in the time of trouble, in the time of judgment, they would be delivered.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, to call upon the name of the God, upon the name of the Lord is a privilege of those who are true worshipers, those who worship God in spirit and truth. Okay. And it's not just saying the word. Okay. That's just something important. Hey, next question, Lawson.
Next one here. Name at least one of two Bible heroes that were recorded as wearing clothing with hair and a leather belt. Now, the answers were, John the Baptist. Firstly, and the other one was Elijah. And this is where people said, you know, that John came in the spirit and the power of Elijah, or thought that he was Elijah, or thought Jesus was Elijah, whatever it may be. But yeah, both of these person, were wearing, you know, clothing of hair and a leather belt. I have a note here though. It says Elijah could have just been hairy depending on the translation, but either way, they were the only two recorded with a leather girdle. So yeah, potentially. But yeah, next one here. As an evidence of taking a vow, what did Paul do in Centuria? And the answer there was he shaved his head. He was taking the vow of the Nazarenes, Nazarite vow, shaving his head, committing himself to the Lord. Next one here, according to Deuteronomy chapter 3,
there's a point here, because that was actually a very controversial thing that the Apostle Paul did.
Oh, yeah. Taking a vow?
Yes, because he had been pressured.
Mm.
Because he was just preaching the gospel to the Gentiles, and the church in Jerusalem was kind of saying, hey, Paul, look, everybody's kind of saying that, you know, we know that we all know that you are powerful in words, in works, but people are saying that to follow Jesus is to abandon the law. Can you just kind of give a message to the Jews saying that the law of Moses is still valid? Yeah, sure. I'm going to offer a vow. Mm-hmm. But how did he offer the vow? Well, by shaving his head, offering that in the temple, and taking a sacrifice.
Mm.
However, that was a mistake, because the sacrifice economies had already been done away with.
Yeah, wow.
And on account of this decision of Paul, it unleashed the chain of events that eventually would lead him to be taken to Rome and imprisoned and later died.
Yeah, wow. Very interesting.
And God disapproved of his offering a sacrifice. It's like, why are you offering a sacrifice?
Mm.
Was my sacrifice not enough?
Mm.
So that's a very interesting story.
And he could reflect on that in his writings, in his epistles, you know, one sacrifice for all time.
Yeah.
Continuing on here, according to Deuteronomy 3, how was the span measured? The answer was A here, an outstretched hand from the tip of the thumb to the tip of the pinky. So it's kind of like, if you guys know, like the cool, like the shaka sign, you know, it's kind of like that. Then finally here in 1 John 1:1, what three of the five senses did the writer experience the word of life firsthand? Now, the answer here was hearing, sight, and touch. Hearing, sight, and touch. And as John chapter 1 and verse 1 reads, it says, that which was from the beginning, which we heard, which we have seen with our own eyes, which we have looked on the church and we have touched, this we proclaim concerning the word of life.
And very interesting, because a lot of scholars believe that 1 John is a letter aimed at combating one of the first heresies that infiltrated the church, Gnosticism.
Yes.
Basically said, yeah, look, Jesus didn't really come in flesh. He was like a spirit. He was a spiritual being. And John, you know, throughout this letter, he's just really fighting against that. One of the things, like, hey, he's a spirit. No, we not only heard, but we saw and we even touched him.
Mm.
Like, he was a real person of flesh and bones. Yeah. He came in the flesh to save us. We have now come to the end of our program today, Lawson.
Aww. Sad.
It came so fast. I cannot believe it's 2 hours already.
Mm-hmm.
We had so much more content to share with you, but fear not, beloved listener. We're going to have Tazzy encounter some great biblical content right after this show and throughout the day. Amazing, wholesome, Bible-centered, Christ-exalting programming. Different from the Olympics. Mm. From the Olympic opening, something completely different, something that is actually going to be honoring of God. Safe place for you, for your children, for your friends to stay here on Faith FM. Mm. And Lawson, whenever I'm talking about demons with people, a lot of people get curious and they want to know more about it. Cause that's a bit of a topic that is, you know, elicits curiosity in a lot of people. And I have a book that helps to, it's a testimony of a man who used to be a demon worshiper, and then he became a worshiper of the true God. But he tells his story, and it's fascinating testimony. Yeah. His name is Roger Munoz. He's Canadian. His book is called The Trip to the Supernatural. What do our beloved listeners need to do so that they can get that book?
Yeah, good question. This book, as we said, is fantastic. We want to give it to you for free. You don't need to answer any questions. You just need to text us with the code word and be the first texter through. That code word will be the word supernatural.
Supernatural.
If you send in the word supernatural, if you're the first person to, you'll get this powerful book.
It's an amazing book. Read.
An amazing testimony of a man who saw it all, you could say, spiritually, and chose Jesus. It's powerful. So guys, 0491-064-669. Text in the word supernatural.
And this is it. Stay tuned with us. Come back tomorrow. We'll be here. And don't forget to talk faith, live faith, and act faith.
God be with you till we meet again. God be with you till we meet again. By his counsel's guide of sheep securely fold you. God be with you till we meet again. Until we meet again at Jesus' feet again. God be with you till we meet again.
Thanks for being a part of the Faith FM family. Join our community on Facebook or get in touch at 1-800-FAITH-FM.